Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is April the 24th, 2014. So glad to have you on our call, and this call, you know, is primarily for, you know, answering your questions, anything that you have about questions about coaching or about business, about marketing, and or any place where you feel stuck or need help. I'm here for you, and you can get ideas from me as well as other people on the call. And so this is great. Today we're going to do a mock session, part two, sort of work with some more people with being able to work with you on whatever issues and goals, challenges that you have, and give you a chance to kind of see how a session is done and get some help for yourself, as well as see how I work with people and get some ideas for you too. So this is great. And I'm just finishing up the level two course I've been working on for a little while now, a Performing Edge Coaching Certification, a level two course that a lot of people have been asking for. So I'll send out more information about that this week and next if you'd like to participate in that. That will be more, more advanced training and just more chance to work with, different coaching techniques and more marketing, how to really get your business going. So I'll send you more info about that. And so now let's go ahead and Michelle, you were going to be a mock client, but Alex, let's see, you mentioned you've got, I worked with you last time. Thank you for, that was great working with you as a mock, our mock session client. And did you have a couple of follow-up questions, some questions for me?
Yeah.
And can you hear me okay, first of all? Can you hear me okay?
I can, yes.
Okay, I just wondered if the volume is okay here. Okay. What were you thinking? Did you have a follow-up question?
Yeah, basically, I think it's mainly a logistic issue.
What is it?
I'm sorry?
Say that again?
It's a logistic issue.
Oh, okay.
It mainly has to do with, your experience, which is many, many years doing this, me just beginning, has a big difference. And the issue is basically how you turn around the audio tape and provide it to the client. Because the way I do it, and again, I'm very new at this, is I get information from the client during the session. Then I meet my clients in an office, not in my home, but a different location, where I do not have a computer. So I get information from the client. Then at the end of the day, at night, then I come home, I write the script, then I practice it, then I tape it, and then maybe if I have enough time, then I send it to the client. So it's very, very different from what apparently you do, which is so much more efficient than I do, which is just put all the information together, you tape it right in front of the client, and as the client walks out, basically, boom, you send it, which is wonderful.
Right.
So mainly because it has to do with, I am much newer with this. Maybe languaging and in English, my second language, may be different. Maybe lack of experience on how to put it all together. So it takes me quite some time to turn this product and put it together and deliver it. So it's not as efficient as yours. So that's basically how. I'm wondering how you do it is. I guess one huge plus must be that you have a computer in front of you. My question is, how are you able to record, tape, and deliver so quickly?
Yeah, well, I have if the client is talking with me first about their, say, for their peak performance experience, then I'd be writing that down. You know, I usually do it by phone, so I've got a headset on, and then I'd be typing their information into my computer, and so then it's right there, and I could kind of read back what they're saying during the visualization. Is there, and that's, you know, yeah, the most efficient way, then you could just record it through Audacity, just to let you and other people know, yeah, how I do it. And maybe one of the most efficient ways is, yeah, have, you know, rather than writing it out by hand on a piece of paper, typing it into some device, computer, or
yeah,
your iPad or something, and then you could record it using that Audacity program, and then just email it to them right away. There, if you, with your situation, Alex, you're in another office, another location where there's no computer, did you say?
Well, I mean, I can bring my computer. There is, I don't know if I need a Wi-Fi connection to do to run Audacity. Maybe not.
Yeah, you wouldn't need
a
Wi-Fi connection for this
okay.
type of thing, I don't think. You could just take your, do you have a laptop computer or something that's portable?
Sure, that I can take, yeah.
Yeah, so if you could just take that to your office, and then as they're you know, talking to you about the experience, just be typing it in, typing in that information, that would work really well. And just tell them you're, you know, taking notes just so you can get their information, you know, the way they say it, the way they understand it, or so that you can, you know, create a really good audio that reflects their words and their language. And usually most clients are fine with that. You know, you're just taking notes basically in a different, instead of just taking them on paper, you're just doing it by computer, but you could also write it out by hand, either way that you're most comfortable with. Actually, what I do it when I have clients in the office here, I just have a clipboard and a piece of paper, and I just write down their experience. So, and then after that, I just have my Audacity program in the computer, and so I just fire that up and then record it. But if you don't have Audacity, you know, for some of you, you can also easily use an iPhone or any kind of recording device.
Oh, I see.
To record your, you know, the audio just simply by reading back. You know, at first, like you say, you might need to kind of put together a script, and you could take a little extra time to do that and afterward, and then send it to the client afterward. But as you get faster at it, more efficient, you can just basically read back their, you know, the phrases that they've used and just put that into a, you know, kind of just put it into a story, an experience right there. And it doesn't have to be perfect. If you make mistakes, that's one thing to kind of, if you could get beyond, you know, perfectionism and just you're just talking to them, and when we talk, we always make mistakes, and we say and ah and, you know, and things, and it's not perfect, and that's okay because, you know, that's the way conversation is. And so I just put it on a recording, and they're using this Audacity program that's in your, you know, and the instructions for doing that are in the PECI, the private members area, for all of you. But and you could also go to just, you know, search on Audacity or SoundForge that makes them and download it. Excuse me. And yeah, and then just
you
email it. If you don't have Wi-Fi there, then you could just go home and email it to them right afterward.
Yeah. So you can tape it. You can record it in Audacity while Because to run Audacity, do you need Wi-Fi?
Not for that. If you have the Audacity program on your computer, excuse me, then you can simply it runs. It's a piece of software that's already on your computer, and you just record it right there without the need of Wi-Fi at all.
All right. The key is then to deliver that recording to the client. So then I need some kind of internet or Wi-Fi of some kind.
Just to do the email part.
Yeah. Unless you were suggesting, which is a great idea, to tape it, to do the audio tape into the iPhone, and then send it to the client.
You could do it that way too, yeah.
Yeah.
That way, it's right there in your iPhone, and and you just click email.
Yeah. All right.
So it's great with these days with all the different devices we have. There's so many choices, ways that you could do that.
Yeah. All right.
Ways that you could send it with any kind of iPhone or any smartphone, or you go to an electronics store and get a Olympus makes different recording devices too.
Yeah. All right. Okay, great. Well, beautiful. So thanks so much. So maybe we can use that as an alternative plan so it become more efficient.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to have to make it, so...
Yeah, but I find myself, just to balance a lot of things. I get home very late at night, 8 p.m., and I have family and a wife and a dog. And so by the time then I try to do this, it's 11 p.m. I'm exhausted. I am.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have time or energy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you could simply, just make it as simple as you can. And it could be just 5 minutes. It doesn't have to be a real long visualization.
Yeah, that's how long my recordings usually are, between 3 and 5 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, the one you sent me before was really good. I thought. MVP.
You liked it? Okay, great.
What's that?
I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah. It was great.
All right.
I have a little bit of a cold, so.
Yeah.
Sorry for the cough. Okay. Well, great. Hopefully that answers your question or helps.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah, hi. Why don't we go to you, Michelle?
Hello.
Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and we'll pretend like we're doing a session here, and you can kind of just excuse me, kind of tell me what's going on. Oh, hang on just a second if you could. Go. Sorry, I had to cough there. Yeah, so why don't you tell me what you'd like to work on, or tell me what's going on.
It sounds like you could use some tropical sunshine for that cough.
Yeah.
So interesting. I was just thinking about what my biggest issue has been as a competitive athlete on the mental level, and then as I'm thinking about what came up for me, it was I possibly got my first client who has a similar issue, so it's kind of good timing.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. So I haven't competed in 2 years. So I'm going back 2 years to when I was living in Canada.
In which
and,
sport?
Adventure racing.
Yeah. Okay.
Was a big one for me, mainly adventure racing and mountain biking, but I didn't seem to experience this in mountain biking, but I I did in adventure racing. I did when I competed in triathlons and tennis. It was kind of always the same thing. And
you,
what it boiled down...
For other people, new people on the call, tell them what adventure racing is.
Oh, it's multi-sport racing, usually in the mountains. You have to orienteer through the course. You're given a topographical map, and you have to assign certain points on it. And you're usually in teams. And the sports involved are normally trail running, mountain biking, traversing, paddling, whitewater paddling, yeah, that sort of thing. But it's off the grid completely, and you're self-sufficient. You have to carry all your own gear and all your own equipment and or that sort of thing. And so for me, I did very well in the sport. But when I would get to the starting line and I'd be looking around at my competition, I generally would, you know, size them up and start talking to myself as though there's no way I could possibly beat that person. And sometimes I knew the person and I knew the reputation, and then other times I would just look at them and look at their physique, and they looked really strong, or, you know, they were younger than I was and whatever. And I was like, there's no way I can beat this person. And just the negative self-talk. But the funny thing is, I often beat these people. I more often beat them, you know, than the other way around. But yet I continue to torment myself. And on the tennis court, same thing. I'd look at my opponent and I'd say the same thing. And this kid that wants help from me right now, he's a professional surfer, he does the same thing to himself. So I think it's probably a common problem.
Yeah. Do you have an event coming up or one you'd like to do?
No, I'm going to do, get back into the bike racing when I get back to Canada. I'm leaving here in June, but yes, so next year, definitely. I'd like to do Leadville 100, which is a 100-miler. Probably not at the same level I did before, but it's just, you know, I think it'd be kind of a nice thing to deal with now so that it doesn't follow me into the future.
Yeah. So what kind of things would you say to yourself, the negative self-talk?
Yeah. Like, I often looked at their physique, and if they were really strong and muscular and lean, you know, especially lean, I would just like, oh, my God, there's no way I can beat that person. Look at them. You know, they are phenomenal. They look like a racehorse. And I just would build them up to be, you know, they're humans, for Pete's sake. And I would build them up to be much grander than they actually were. And then if they had a good reputation in the sport that I knew about, of course, I would think that, you know, there's just no way I can get them. And so I'm already thinking I'm going for second place. For some reason, I didn't do that in mountain biking, those thoughts. It's the only sport it doesn't come into my mind when I'm on the start line. And so when I do race mountain bikes, I'm very relaxed because of it. And I think I enjoy it a lot more. And I get really, you know, an upset stomach and, before other races, and I feel kind of weak because of just the tension that I'm creating in my body. And
yeah.
I'm not focused on the event, you know, I'm focused on my competitor more than the event.
Right. So it's interesting that you say with mountain biking, you didn't do that?
No, it's the only sport I haven't done it. I mean, I used to downhill ski race. Oh, I'd be so sick in the morning. You know, I didn't think I was even going to make it to the, you know, the gate, the start gate, because I was just feeling so ill, almost vomiting, you know, when I was younger. And as I've gotten older, I say, oh, gosh, I'm doing this for fun. You know, this why am I getting nervous? This is, I'm not going to the Olympics with this stuff. So I've got a healthier attitude today than I did back then. Our maturity around it, but it's still you know, those gremlins still creep in, and I don't like it.
Yeah. So tell me about the mountain biking that you didn't do that, because maybe we could draw some some strengths and some things, good things that you're doing from there that you could carry over into your adventure racing.
Mm-hmm.
So with a mountain bike race, can you tell me about, like, one of your best experiences there?
Probably, I've had a lot of really good mountain biking experiences.
Think of one of your best ones that really stands out for you, that where you felt like you were doing your absolute best or felt your best?
Yeah, I have one in my mind. Yeah.
So take me through the play-by-play of that, of the mountain bike.
So it's a Tuscan metal. Squamish, British Columbia.
Okay.
It's just a town north of Vancouver, between Vancouver and Whistler. And they have this annual race. It's called the Test of Metal, and it's about a 70-kilometer course. And anything under 4 hours is a great time. That year, I was 3:20 or 3:21.
Wow.
Still one of the fastest times for that course for my age group. And I was just totally in the zone, as you would call it, or the flow. Like my heart rate was quite high for the whole race. I had a heart rate monitor on, but I should have been bonking at that heart rate, but I wasn't. I think I just had my adrenaline was overriding it, my competitive instinct. I was just technically, I was riding really well. I wasn't even hesitating, riding over certain drops and obstacles and, you know, skinny ladders and so on. And I felt very confident. I absolutely loved the race. I think that's probably, there was no struggle for me. Whereas in the adventure racing, I sometimes have to dig really deep. And I think the difference between the tennis and the triathlons and that and mountain biking, I think mountain biking is just so fun that maybe trumps everything. And so I forget about the pain and the suffering and the competition, and it's just the pure fun of the sport. And then before I know it, the race is over and I've, you know, had a great performance. It's all I can think is the difference. But yeah, so in this particular race, I just rode strong from the get-go. I started strong and I just picked up momentum and got stronger as the race wore on, instead of, you know, fatiguing, and finished the race feeling great, not tired or worn out at all, just on a complete high.
Great. Win the race or win your age group, or how did you place?
Yeah, no, I won, and I won my age group, and I it might still be a record for my age group.
Great.
Course record. Yeah, no, I ripped it. So it's kind of like people in Vancouver, you know how people train for marathons and that's sort of their benchmark race for the year. They do a big marathon or a Boston or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Where I live, it's a Test of Metal. That's kind of what people do, you know, and the race sells out in 7 minutes on New Year's Day. You get online and you try to get in, and basically the first 1,000 get in and it sells out in, you know, under 10 minutes. It's pretty popular. Yeah. So
that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, it was a really good race for me. That's always been a good race for me. Most mountain bike races have, and there hasn't been the mental anguish that I face when I'm doing other competitive sports.
Yeah. So in that mountain bike race, when you started, did you have nervousness, or how did you handle any nervousness at the beginning?
For me with riding, it's just excitement. I don't really, the nerves, it's if they're there a little bit, but nothing to even mention. I'm just really excited to ride the course.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have a confidence in that sport that I don't have in the other sports, I guess. Although, I do well in those as well. But I don't like, arriving at an event and sizing up my competition and focusing on the other women and thinking to myself, oh, they're going to beat me. Look at them. They look so fit and strong and fast. And, oh, they've got a great reputation. They won this, that, and the other. And it's just a waste of mental energy,
Yeah.
And I don't want to go to that place continuously, which is what I do in every other competitive sport I do other than mountain biking.
Yeah, exactly. So
if I could just somehow get, if I could just be on the start line for an adventure race or a triathlon and be a little bit nervous, but rather be excited and look forward to the event and not pay attention to what the competition is doing.
Right.
That would be my goal. And then not to get just the stomach, upset and the nerves that, comes along with that.
Yeah.
Anxiety.
Yeah, in that mountain bike race, can you kind of go into all five senses, too, and tell me what were you feeling and what were you seeing? What were you hearing? Those kind of things. What anything you noticed that you could kind of feel in your muscles?
Yeah, when you're riding, you're looking sort of 20 feet ahead of you, 30 feet ahead of you, and you just see the ground going by super fast. You see lots of different terrain obstacles, granite, rock, and roots and drops, and amazingly different features. And you feel a lot of power in your upper body as you steer the bike through. And you can feel your heart working hard. My heart rate gets quite high during a race, and I'm very aware of the other riders around me, and looking for places where you can pass that are, safe and so on for both you and them. And then there's often crowds, at spill zones. There's a lot of people standing along the side of the course yelling and cheering, and which is really great. That's about it, really.
Yeah. Writing all this down, you describe it really well. And on that day at the Squamish race, what was the weather like there?
It was sunny, I think, probably around 18 degrees.
Which is how much Fahrenheit?
It would be about 70 degrees. And the start of the race is a flat section for about 8 kilometers, and then a very significant hill climb for about 4 kilometers. This is all on the road, and then you're into the trails.
Okay.
And then you hit the trails, and you've got about 7 or 8 kilometers of technical single track, and then you've got after that about an hour hill climb, which is treacherous. And
uh-huh.
By then the sun has come out and it's right on the track, so it's quite hot. And so you climb for about an hour, and then you have a really technical descent, and that's where a lot of people get flats and they get muscle cramping and so on because they've worked so hard getting up the hill, and now they're just ripping down and they're not spinning, and you can cramp up there quite easily.
So what did you do to do the right way?
I don't cramp. I'm lucky that way. I've never had a cramp. So. Anyway, and then it's super technical down. If you can ride the whole down without getting off, you're a superstar. And then after that, you...
So what mindset do you have to be in to be able to handle all that technical stuff, the routes and all the obstacles?
You have to be 100% focused. I would equate it to rock climbing, you know, where you really have to pay attention to everything. Like, really, you have to look ahead. You have to know when to brake and know when to let off on the brakes and know when to pedal and accelerate. And then you also have people that are, you know, you have some guys that can just go screaming down those hills and they'll want to pass you. So you have to make way for them. And then, you know, you're going to try to pass a few people if you can. It's really intense. It's very exciting, too. You know, a lot of people are falling off their bike and so on, and tensions are high at this point. You can go on YouTube and you can see that section of the course to know what I'm talking about. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Powerhouse Plunge, that's the name of the section. And
what's
so
it called?
People before, Powerhouse Plunge.
Powerhouse Plunge?
Yeah, and you know, you'll go up and do that section of the course a couple times before the race and just practice it, because if you can get through that, you're golden. And then you have, you know, bears that'll come out on the tracks, and then you have environmentalists who come out and, you know, pick fights with the riders, and I mean, there's lots of different activity going on out there.
Right in the middle of the race?
Yeah, because they don't like people going through the forest. They, you know, they say it's not good for the ecology and so on. So every year you get a couple of those crazy people out there, and they've pulled bikes away from people and thrown them down the hill and so on. It's never happened to me, thank God. But I've heard
that's
stories.
Crazy in the middle of a race.
Yeah.
You have to contend with that. You've got one kind of competitor, your other bikers, and then you've got these guys.
Yeah, I know. So that's a race, really, in a nutshell, 70 kilometers.
Yeah, and what do you do when you get tired? Was there certain times when you got tired and sort of you got through that?
Yeah, the last half an hour is kind of a rough section, and usually I have a friend at the feed zone give me, you know, a bottle of flat Coke, and that gets me through the last half an hour.
Uh-huh.
But generally, like, I train pretty hard for it, and I definitely log the miles beforehand, and because I don't like to suffer. I'll suffer to an extent, but I prefer to go in prepared so I can really give it, you know, 110% and feel good as opposed to in pain. So, you know, I get tired, but I was listening to your tape from last week when you were talking to Alex and that other fellow and, you know, discerning between good pain and bad pain and, you know, the pain that's damaging to your body, but this is good pain. Like, it's good suffering. You know, you're just using your body the way it was meant to be used, and it feels good for me.
Yeah.
When I'm prepared, when I go into something like that not trained, it doesn't feel good.
Yeah, right. So, and then toward the end of the race, how did you feel? Yeah, it's kind of coming in to the finish line.
Yeah, I felt like I gave it everything I had, and I felt depleted for sure and spent, but I still felt good. Like, I had that, you know, that high you get when you cross a finish line and you got that endorphin rush and so on. I had all of that going on. I didn't realize how fast my time was.
Yeah, were there people cheering and all at the finish.
Yeah, and you get the film crew out there, and, you know, they want to interview you and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
So there's definitely a lot of excitement around the finish area and celebration.
Yeah.
So that
remember
was
what
probably
you said in the interview?
Probably a highlight for me. Pretty much like what I'm just probably just what I'm, you know, saying to you, and, you know, probably commented on a good course setting and that sort of thing, you know, very well run race, and, you know, do the diplomatic thing.
Mm-hmm.
But more, it was just, you know, I know what that feeling is to be completely in the zone and for everything to be working symbiotically together. I know that feeling, what it's like. And I know when I'm stressing about my opponents, I never have that feeling.
Yeah.
It's always a struggle as opposed to this, which is ease. I'm doing it with ease, a certain amount of ease, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So
I'm not giving you enough information, am I?
No, this is great. I think, and this is the kind of thing you want to do with your clients. The more information you can get, the better audio MP3 you can make for them with all the details.
Mm-hmm.
And the good part about this is that the mountain bike, you had this really good experience with mountain biking where there's, you don't have the negative self-talk. And that mountain biking is often a part of adventure racing, right? One component
mm-hmm.
of it.
Yeah.
So if we could take that mountain bike experience and imagine that it's, you know, and you know, relive that, recapture those good feelings, and then kind of almost like take that chunk and place it into an adventure racing experience. You know, imagine the adventure racing was first, or the mountain biking was first,
mm-hmm.
in the adventure racing to get you in the zone, in the right place, then that may carry over into, you know, so you go into it with that mountain biking mindset, you know, rather than the sizing up your competition mindset.
Yeah,
the mountain biking part that could carry over into, you know, the trail running and kayaking and other things.
Mm-hmm.
So, so this is great. So I, so why don't we make do a short visualization here based on what you said, and I'll. You know, I'll do a kind of shorter, abbreviated version and see how my voice holds out. And if I have a little cold, if I start coughing, then I'll stop, and then I'll do it. You know, I can also do it. If that doesn't work, I can do a second recording afterward when my voice gets better here in a couple days and put that also in the members area. So we'll have two, kind of a plan A and a plan B here.
Okay.
Normally it's no big deal, no problem, but for some reason I got this funny little cough. but it seems to be okay for the moment. So, why don't you, let's do a short little visualization just based on what you said with the mountain biking. And we'll sort of put it into, you know, imagine that it's like the first event of adventure racing. Is it usually, what order does adventure racing usually go in?
It varies. It's pretty much all over the map.
Yeah, okay.
You know, often there's a map component is often first, and that's my absolute weakest.
Which one?
The mapping, you know, the figuring out the course, and I'm awful at it. there's a negative self-talk again.
Yeah.
And I inevitably get voted as a person to do the orienteering, and I totally lack confidence in that. But anyway, that's a different story.
Okay, so that one suggestion with that would be to work on your mapping and get confident, increase your confidence in that area. Just, with the experience and all, that could help you just feel good about, about handling the whole race kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, 1 year I was doing it as a solo, and I came upon this French guy, and I said, "Oh, do you want to do the orienteering together?" And he said, in his heavy French accent, "I am the French national champion. If you can keep up with me, you can follow."
Oh, great.
And so I said, "Yeah, I know." I said, "How about you draft from me, and you tell me where to go?" He said, "Deal." So, that's how I solved that problem. Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Symbiotic relationship. Is drafting legal in the adventure racing?
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but depending on the course, drafting might not help if you're going uphill.
No, exactly. But we were in some logging roads and, some pretty fast terrain there, so he didn't mind that. My brain shuts off when I'm looking at a map. It's awful.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. I'm sort of directionally challenged myself.
Yeah.
I think it's part of it's maybe a genetic thing.
Maybe it's a female thing.
And I think men are just better at directions sometimes than women in some some studies show that they naturally kind of know north and south better, whereas women mm-hmm. tend to go looking at landmarks and things in terms of directions. Kind of interesting.
Right. Yeah. Sounds right.
Men never ask, typically won't ask other people for directions, whereas we will, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, okay, here we go. Let's do a short visualization based on what you said here. And imagine that mountain biking is the first part of your adventure racing, so that we can sort of put that good experience together with bring that into the adventure racing to bring more confidence there. Okay, so... So we'll start the visualization here. So here's how I would do this with clients, and how I'll do it with you. So Michelle, take in some deep breaths now. Let your eyes gently close. Find a comfortable position in the chair, and just imagine yourself. You're getting ready for your adventure racing. The mountain biking is the first event. Imagine yourself there. You're in Squamish, British Columbia, the Test of Metal race, a 70-kilometer course. And, you're feeling really good, really psyched. There's a little bit of nerves, but the nerves are excitement. That your adrenaline is going, you're excited, you're ready to roll. You've trained for this course. This is so easy. And so doable. And it's sunny, it's 70 degrees Fahrenheit, 18 Celsius. And take in some deep breaths now and just put your hand on your abdomen a couple inches below your belly button. Check your breathing. Just imagine that as you breathe in, there's a balloon inside your stomach. As you breathe in, fill up the balloon with air. As you breathe out, let the balloon collapse back down. And just relax. And you get to the start. And then we'll do centering technique. Breathe in through your nose. Focus on your center. right behind your belly button. And breathe out through your mouth and relax. Good. As you breathe out all the tension out through those special openings in your fingertips and toes. So at the start, you take your excitement there. And you hear the gun go off. And you're riding, it's flat at first, the first 8K, and you're just getting warmed up, feeling comfortable. And your heart rate is good. This is so much fun. You're on a complete high. You are in your element. Michelle, you're doing exactly what you know how to do. Then you get to the hill climb, about 4K for your hill climb. Feeling strong inside. Your heart rate is high. You're technically riding well. Feeling strong. And you're in just the right gear at just the right times. And you climb and you're just getting stronger and stronger as you ascend the hill. And then you're on the trails. You get to the top of the hill. You take a sigh of relief and, oh, I made it to the top. And then you're right onto the hills, 7, 8K of single track. And enjoying the trails and just looking everywhere. Just you're aware of other riders. You're looking for places you can pass. Using your magnet technique. So if you see a rider in front, imagine a magnet on their back and that you can rather than working so hard to catch up, imagine that magnet is drawing you toward that person effortlessly so you feel their energy pulling you along. They are doing the work rather than you. Good. And you pass people when you can. And then you get to the one-hour hill climb and you're just going straight up and pacing yourself just right. You're mentally focused. You're physically relaxed. You're in the zone. Good. Then you get to the technical descent. You're spinning. It's super technical. You are 100% focused. It's like you're rock climbing. You're paying perfect attention. You're looking ahead. You know when to brake. You know when to accelerate. You can pass. This is a good time to pass people when you can. Any obstacles that you can just go around and you can deal with whatever is out there. And you're on a complete high. This is so much fun. And as you're going down the hill, there's granite. You're looking for rock, for roots, for the drops, for all the features. You are so confident. You are so strong and you know exactly how to handle everything that's before you. You feel so much power in your upper body. You feel your heart rate is high. And as you're moving along, you feel strong and powerful. Your body is light and fluid. You're feeling even more optimistic and more positive. Michelle, you are tuned in to the moment. you have an acute awareness of everything going on within you and all around you. This is so much fun and so enjoyable as you're getting closer to the finish line. You're feeling energized with absolute composure. And as you're moving toward the finish line, you're an automatic pilot with effortless speed. You know how to handle all the obstacles around you. You're feeling invincible. And you're in the zone. You have this total self-confidence. You're floating with ease. You're completely engaged in what you're doing. And as you're on your mountain bike and you're spinning, you're in the right gear, you're in perfect control. You have this ideal sense of well-being. And as you're getting closer to the finish line, everything falls into place for you now. You are fully alive. You're giving it everything you have as you're coming in. The last half hour, you get that flat Coke and from a friend. That rough section, you remind yourself, I've trained this beforehand. I've logged the miles. I know my body can handle this. And now you come in to the finish line. You hear the crowds cheering. The camera crew is there. You give it everything you have. Come across the finish line. You put your hands up in the air. You're feeling this wonderful high. You're tired, you're depleted, and also feeling so good. And the crowd and the film crew interviews you, and it's such a highlight, such a wonderful ending. You're completely in the zone. And now, Michelle, let's create a success anchor for this experience. Imagine a color, shape, a word, or physical gesture, something to remember this experience by. Something you did then, maybe when you crossed the finish line, or something to associate that experience. And that can be your anchor. And see yourself now placing this mountain bike race right into your adventure race. You see yourself now going from that mountain bike experience right into your trail running, your kayaking, and you're putting it all together. So you carry this good feeling of confidence, power, and inner strength. Being in the zone, you carry that zone mentality right into your adventure racing, into the trail running and kayaking and every event. So the mountain biking becomes a part, this powerful mountain bike experience becomes part of your adventure racing. And you carry all that energy with you. And you have that same mindset with you as you're in your adventure racing. So the mountain biking experience and adventure racing is one and the same. Same mentality, same mindset, same feeling being in the zone. You're right there, 100% in that experience. Good. So now, Michelle, take in some deep breaths and all these things we've experienced here. They'll begin to translate into real positive, tangible changes in your life, your racing, your training. And now just imagine yourself walking up a set of stairs from 1 to 5, and each stair you feel more alert, more awake, and refreshed. Start with stair 1, and stair 2, and 3. You feel more alert, more awake. Stair 4, and stair five. And you can begin to open your eyes and come back in the room. Yeah, great. How did that feel?
Oh, that was good. Yeah, you described the course very well, as though you were right there doing it with me. So that was pretty nifty.
Yeah, great.
I like the, I actually felt like I was reliving that event very well, like quite accurately. So that was awesome. And then I like the success anchor and transposing this experience into this feeling of being energized and in the zone and transferring that into other sports to create a more positive, you know, competitive experience.
Yeah. Yeah, what did you, were you able to create a success anchor? What did you think of?
Yeah, for me, it's always the hands up in the air as you're riding across the finish line.
Okay.
Yeah. And a big cheesy grin on my face. Yeah. And,
okay.
So it was very good. Thank you.
Yeah, great. So I was basically, so you can, you know, and then I would send you the MP3 and say play it tonight before you go to bed and tomorrow.
I am playing it before I go to bed because I am going to bed soon, so it's perfect.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it's really late there in Bali in Indonesia, right?
Yeah. So then I guess my question is when I go to a tennis match or a triathlon or whatever it is that I'll do when I get back to Canada, to not, you know, default to what I typically do, which is what I described earlier, should I then be just thinking about this visualization? Should I be doing that?
Yeah, I think so. And if I, that feeling that you get when you're mountain biking, you can carry that over into your tennis and all. And if you were a client, if I was, you know, continuing to work with you, then we'd work with the other sports, with tennis and adventure racing, and be able to go into the specifics of that sport too and feel, you know, regain that confidence and all.
Right.
Too, and you can,
so it's basically just a confidence issue, and the way to deal with the confidence is create a peak performance visualization, really.
Yeah, I mean, that's the first step, I think, and then there's probably many peak performances that you've had. You can draw on other ones too, and carry that over into, yeah, the other sports, and see yourself,
right.
You know, kind of take it in baby steps, and be able to say, you know, get confident with one little thing, maybe, you know, like with the mapping, or start with something simple, easier, like the kayak. What sport you feel the next most confident in? Would that be trail running or kayaking?
Yeah, trail running.
Yeah. And, you know, and create that, you know, confidence in that sport and then go to kayaking and then maybe the mapping last when it's the most difficult one.
Okay. Try to build some mini successes before tackling the big one.
Yeah, exactly. And then, sort of, yeah, then you sort of put them all together. It's like playing a piano. You do the left hand and the right hand and then both.
Yeah, right. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, great. And you gave a lot of really good information, so that really helps. You described the biking really well, so that helped me to put it all together with the visualization there, too. And then I'd send you that and ask you to, we'd kind of do a debriefing on the next time around.
Okay.
Yeah. So, or Alex, are you still there too?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Any comments or anything?
No,
you noticed,
I thought it was great. I think if you make a point of going with all the sensory details of the nice experience that Michelle had as a way of repeating in your mind that positive experience. That clearly works very well.
Yeah.
No, it's wonderful. There's a lot of emphasis on the experience per se, not that try to combine not just the telling of the story, but also what, in this case, Michelle was feeling while biking. Because all the sensory awareness is the one that we really remember the most. Perfect. Fantastic.
Yeah. Good, yeah, exactly. And, like, thanks, Alex. And
yeah, sure.
And Michelle, when you were saying, like, being aware of the granite and the rocks and the roots, and, you know, those kind of things are really helpful to bring in because that really brings you into the experience. I've done mountain biking, too, and so I kind of felt like I was there with you, you know, visualizing it myself as well. If you can, and all of you, if you can, when you're doing this with your clients, if you can feel like you're actually in that experience, put yourself right smack in the middle of that experience as you're doing the visualization, then you'll, make it more real. Your voice, it'll come through in your voice as you're talking them through the experience on an audio like that.
And you can really see how important using their wording is to create, like, recreate that situation.
Yeah. Yeah, and it gives you a lot of power, I think, too, because it's like a lot of people say, yeah, I feel like you were inside my head, or you were thinking exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
You've given me your thoughts beforehand, so that really helps. But it gives
you're just kind of mirroring it back.
Yeah. And you don't have to say it exactly the same. You could add your own words, too, like I did, some other phrases.
Mm-hmm.
So, great. Yeah. Well, thanks, Michelle, for being our mock client today.
Thanks, Dr. John.
I think I should let my voice rest here and take some cough medicine.
Yes, great.
So thanks for your patience today. And, this recording will be available right away within the next day or so here. And, this will be great. And our next call would be, it's always on the second, fourth Thursday of the month. So the next one would be May the 8th.
Okay.
Yeah. So any other questions that you have, either of you?
I just wanted to tell you that I watched this fantastic video online called The Placebo Effect. I don't know if you've seen it, but it was it's kind of related to what you were talking about in terms of doing visualizations for healing purposes.
Uh-huh.
And how
on YouTube?
It was on YouTube. Like when you were talking last year about your surgery and how you would do your own visualization to expedite the whole healing process, and then your doctor said that you recovered very quickly.
Uh-huh.
And in this video, basically they're looking at the mind and how it can heal the body, and they're doing all of these studies now in Harvard as well. And it's a very real phenomenon, and it's so much so that people that go in for knee surgery, they've done, they've acted as though they've performed the surgery on the client, and, you know, they've done the incisions and so on, but they haven't actually done anything to the knee, and they're getting the same success rates from that as from the real surgery.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Huh. That's
quite a phenomenal movie, and it's backed by a lot of science and study.
Is it available? Can I just go to YouTube and search on The Placebo Effect?
Yeah. I think I'll look for the link and I'll email it to you, or I'll post. Oh no, I won't put it on Facebook, but I'll send you the email link if I can find it. It was very interesting, just the power of the mind. It was all about the power of the mind. And for antidepressants and all of these, you know, for mental illness, they're saying that the mind is more powerful in healing those afflictions than the drugs.
Yeah, and that just feeds right into our profession here.
Yeah, it's very supportive of what you're saying. Really amazing.
Yeah. Would you mind adding my name to the email, Michelle?
Sure. Can I post it on Facebook or
just put it on our Facebook page there? So just go to PECI private group and all of you, your members, and put it there. Yeah, and then if you could just email it to me personally too, that'd be great. And I'll email it to you too, Alex, afterwards.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
I'll email it to the whole group, yeah.
Great, thanks.
Joanne, it's Amy. I just wanted you to know I've been listening.
Oh, I didn't know that. Hi, Amy.
How are you?
Good.
Now, that was interesting. I was just listening to the visualization and everything.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, I'm glad you could join us. Great. Amy, did you have any other questions or anything to report? You're always doing such great things.
Not really, nothing new. I'm just waiting for these college coaches to finish their seasons so I can kind of nail them down and get some testimonials, but they're so crazy during the middle of the season that I'm just waiting till it's all over and then...
Oh, yeah, for which sport?
Lacrosse and tennis.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So...
Yeah, that would be really great to get some testimonials from them.
Yeah, I really want to do that. It's even hard to do that because, you know, you email them and then I find that people don't love giving testimonials, that you have to keep going back and bothering them about it because they forget or that, you know, 3 weeks has gone by and they still haven't sent it.
Yeah, one thing you can do is... it makes it easier is just say, call it a quotation or a comment rather than a testimonial first, so it doesn't sound so threatening and it doesn't sound, you know, that big a deal. And just say, hey, I'd like to get a quick comment from you about our work together. Just to make it easier, I wrote out a couple of possibilities here. Can you maybe you could choose one of these you like, or edit, or write your own, and then put like one, two, three, and just choose one. And oftentimes they'll just choose one of them and say, "Oh, I like A." You can use that. And most people, would prefer to do that, and that way you can get if you have it on email, you know, that's an official document that you use, that you have their approval. And then you can just email back and say thank you. Does that kind of make sense?
You write the script, write a couple of different scenarios, and then say, but that's not presumptuous to ask them that.
I think it's just kind of standard procedure that everyone does. Otherwise people just don't take the time to write their own, I think. Or you could always, you know, and give them the option, say you could choose one of these or feel free to write your own. So they have the option. Yeah, that would work great, yeah.
One more question.
Sure.
What do you think about sending them a survey? Do you think that that's a good way to get feedback, is by making up a survey and emailing it to them and having them fill it out just so I can get some more information about specific things about the workshop or about the areas that they need to be working on?
I think that's a great idea, Amy, yeah. A survey or questionnaire.
Sorry to make you talk.
Sorry, yeah, my voice is kind of going out here because I have a cold. but maybe we can talk about that more next time, too. I'll write it down here, survey questionnaire, and I could write out some questions that you could ask.
Can I just ask you for, could you just give me like a quick example of something that you would have written as a comment from somebody?
Let's see. I mean, most simple one would be, I'll have to look up what I've got. I've got several of them I could I'll just send them to the whole list here.
That would be fantastic. That would be really helpful.
Okay.
I never knew you could, that's a great idea, because I think people would say, yeah, just A is fine, just do that one.
Yeah, most people do that. I mean, I did that with Jack Canfield, who's, very famous, wrote The Chicken Soup for the Soul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that in your book.
Saw him at a conference and then just said, would you, pick one, two, or three, and he picked number one, and we were off and running. I could put that on the cover of my book. So, let me just think about them, and I'll just email them to you. Amy's techniques. I found Amy's techniques extremely helpful in our coaching our athletes at blah 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 school. That would be a very simple one. But also, I'll email you more the next couple days. I'll just send out an email with that. So, with several kind of samples.
Okay, that would be great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Yeah. So, that's a great question. Thanks, Amy. Yeah, I always love all your questions here. You want to just go around, and if you could just say one thing that you found most helpful or one nugget to kind of reinforce something that was most helpful in today's call, and maybe Michelle or Alex or Amy, that would be great.
Well, my nugget was what you just said.
Okay. Yeah, the comments.
I didn't realize that that was the protocol that people do, that they write a standard statement and then email it to the person and say, which one do you think would be a problem?
Yeah, that's a standard protocol. So, there's nothing wrong with that at all. It's very, very acceptable. And people really appreciate it because they don't have to do any work then.
Right. Okay, that's a great idea. That was a really good nugget, Joanne.
Okay, great. Yeah, anyone else? Is Michelle or Alex still up there?
Well, I really enjoyed the visualization that you did for me. And I remember when we were doing our homework, and that was one of our assignments. We had to do a peak performance visualization for, a friend or whomever. And the feedback I received on it was the exact feedback that I felt I received from you today. So now it kind of ties in all really nicely. And it's just that sense that when you're doing the visualization for me, I really feel like I'm in the event because you're using my words, you're doing it at a nice pace, and it does simulate the event very well. And so it just feels right. So it was good to experience it on the receiving end as opposed to giving it.
Yeah, great. That's really helpful feedback. And it's great that you could experience it, yeah. So you know that it works.
Alex?
Yeah, well, I just reiterating what I have said before, that the essence of the image is to cover a lot of things, including the...
Can you say that again?
Yeah, I think the essence of effective imagery work is to bring to the athlete's awareness of the sensory input, because that's the one that the body remembers the most and the most effectively. So by the more we incorporate those sensations through the five senses, the more it becomes more alive experience, and much easier to remember and to then to later recall when they are about to perform next time. So yeah.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Alex. So. Yeah, great. Okay, well, so good to have all of you on the call, and great to go through this talk session with you. So thank you so much, and our next call will be, put it on your calendars there, May the 8th at 9 a.m. Pacific, and look forward to you then. If you have suggestions for topics that you'd like me to cover, feel free to email those to me, too. I'm always open to your suggestions.
All right.
And I just love working with you and love talking with you and helping in any way that I can. So we'll talk to you all soon.
Great. Feel better.
Thanks, Joanne. Yeah,
okay,
feel better.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Okay,
bye, everyone.
Bye, Michelle. Bye, Amy.
Thank you, Doug. Thank you very much. Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye now.